absolutely wild as Vern Gagne's all-star wrestling goes coast to coast and continent to continent. The greatest wrestlers in the world.
He may be an apprentice carpenter, but I guarantee you he is a seasoned ring veteran.
I've been hit with bar stools, bar rags, bar maids.
I'm talking to you!
They're scared that Hulkamania's still running wild.
Oh, yeah. I got a big fat wife and 9 kids at home, and I gotta feed them!
And take a look at Jesse the Body in real life.
Open your hand once if you would.
You want to see it?
This is absolutely unbelievable. Totally, completely out of control. He's coming in over the top. Hey! Look out!
Hey, look out is right. Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Tubbs. I am I'm a preeminent host of a preeminent podcast. This is AWA Unleashed, where we talk about what we consider to be the best territory in the history of the professional wrestling business. I am preeminent. These guys are also preeminent. Mick Karch and Polish Joe Chupik. Now, before we get going, guys, I have to say that intro, the two things that I love, number one, you've got the Crusher saying, I've been hit by
barmaids, bar stools, bar rags.
Barmaids. It's like, I don't know what those are. But the other day at work, we were talking about Kirk Cousins and his contract situation. And then we were talking about Latrell Sprewell and his whole Minnesota Timberwolves. I got to feed my family. You want to know what I did on the air? I referenced Stan Hansen. I got a big fat wife at home and 9 kids, and I have to feed them. And I did that playing my best Kirk Cousins.
That's wonderful. Wrestling always ties in somehow.
I always do one. If I can't get in one wrestling reference per show, I do it wrong. I've had a bad day.
You know, and it almost permeates because, like, on my regular Facebook page, not the Slick page, I'll be talking about dogs or I'll be talking about a fishing trip, and some guy will answer, well, what about that time you caused Vern millions? You know, just please. Please, there's a little more to it than just wrestling, except once a week right here.
I find myself using the phrase gimmick or the word gimmick.
Yes, I've done that on the air. People are like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, you don't know about that gimmick? Yes, thank you.
My wife will just roll her eyes at times. It's like, hey, hand me the gimmick. What the fuck are you talking about? What gimmick?
You got the three preeminent gimmicks right here.
Oh, man. We are all gimmicks. Today, we're going to talk about a guy that was no gimmick. Ooh. Maybe one of the toughest individuals ever. How you feeling, Joe? How's
the memories are rushing back.
Big bloody nipple and a red chest, Joe Chupik. We'll get to that here in a minute. I'm not wrong because I know you're going to tell that story. We're going to talk about the legendary Wahoo McDaniel. I am excited about this. We've had a lot of requests for the profiles, and I'm excited to get into it. But before we do, guys, got a little bit of business to take care of. First of all, of course, we've got our membership tiers, guys. I'm going to put the graphic up, and I'm also going to put the scroll there. We've got the YouTube, and I've got a couple more ideas, guys, that I'm going to throw past you when we get a little bit of time. I know that we all kind of got some stuff outside of the podcast that we're working on, including, you know, shoot jobs. But there we've got here, guys, for YouTube Body Slam. You can see $2.99 access to the podcast, monthly live chat. You're going to get a letter with a sticker and a magnet. You know, Bruce said he didn't get a magnet. I'm going to have to check. I'm pretty sure I put a magnet in there, but I'll take care of you there, Bruce. Pinfall, $4.99. You get access to the pod a day early. Get the monthly video watch-along, which has gone over huge. You get the live stream, which we usually do the last Sunday night in the month, probably about 7 o'clock Central. The sticker and a magnet. However, I've been told that kind of like what's the old infomercial? But wait, there's more.
So you don't forget, order before midnight tonight. You know, yes. As if midnight limited is something magical. Yeah. Look at that. Wait a minute. Did I say that? Oh, I guess I did.
I don't know if you said it. I put it up there, and once it's out there, and it's in the podcast verse, you got to own it.
Otherwise,
I'm going to take this. I'm a Slick Mick guy. You know what I'm going to do?
Careful.
Turn it around.
Yay!
Boo.
Talk about getting chopped across the chest. Yes, I will send 5 4x6 photos of old AWA stars as part of the package, the pinfall package. It comes at great expense to me, but I don't care. I'm that kind of a guy. I'm a benevolent guy, and we're gonna sweeten the pot.
Don't make up words, Mick. Okay, benevolent. That's a 4-syllable word that you just made up on the fly. It sounds good. Benevolent.
Who is this Ben guy?
Well, Yeah, it's Dom and Nick Mysterio, and then Ben Nevolent.
Nick, I just want to clarify that it's you're paying for the postage, and it's not COD.
Oh, that's right, because you didn't put that in the notes.
Hey, clarification is good, just so that everybody knows.
Well, you know, whenever Vernon, the office sent me my check back in the day, it was always COD. You know, if I wasn't home, you know, you're fucked.
So, well, the check was such that you're actually paying, you're losing money to accept the check.
Vern bounced the check over to me once a month. Here we go. But yes, we'll add some pictures of the AWA stars to the package, sweeten it up a little bit.
Nice. Love it. And yeah, guys, thank you for everybody that's done it. And by the way, one more thing, Glenn Anderson, I know that you've signed up. Email me your shipping address. It's the awaunleashpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get settled up. So I just want to make sure that we take care of you. If you want a Slick Mick mug, guys, just like this, so you want some new AWA Unleashed merch, we've got a brand new store, TeePublic. Go to use Unleashed Plus. We've got stickers. We've got magnets. We've got mugs. We've got T-shirts. We've got all sorts of things. We got phone cases. So we got a lot of things, and it's really cool. I'm really excited about it. We're doing some really cool things here on the podcast. All right, should we get into Wahoo? Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we get into it? Because I know there's a lot to get into with Wahoo. Because I mean, legendary. You don't even have to say. I mean, he's kind of one of those guys that can go by one name, Wahoo.
It's interesting too. Wahoo's career, we all know it. It was much beyond the AWA with everything he did in the business. Our focus, of course, is going to be on the AWA. But in general, oh, my God, you talk about legends in the business. And this is a guy from a time where the wrestlers were tough and they drank beer and they fought in bars and they went from town to town riding 500 miles, 1,000 miles with each other and getting into all kinds of shit just about everywhere. And Wahoo was legendary. Joe and I had the opportunity to work with him, and this is going to be a fun show.
Well, before Wahoo the wrestler was Wahoo the athlete and professional athlete.
Yes.
Most fans know Wahoo was actually a professional football player. Played with the Houston Oilers, the Denver Broncos, New York Jets, and Miami Dolphins. And when you play professional sports, you are at an elite level. I don't care if you are the 53rd man on an NFL roster or the 25th man on a major league baseball roster. You are an elite athlete. Wahoo was one of them. He had gotten, with his name, Wahoo, the fans, when Wahoo would make a tackle, the announcer would say, "The tackle made by who? Wahoo!" And it was, you know, like I'm trying to think of when the fans will start, you know, you think that they're booing somebody. Right. They're not booing somebody. It's just sort of a chant that they do. That's what they did for Wahoo McDaniels.
You know, I'm looking at that card there. Yeah, when Wahoo was with the Broncos, and they got him billed at 235 back then at age 24, 3 years into the professional ranks. And by the time Wahoo got out of the business, I think he had probably beefed up about 65, 70 pounds. So you're looking at a young Wahoo McDaniel, but boy, I'm telling you, anybody who was in the ring with Wahoo, the veterans who were, they have scars, they have handprints. But they will tell you to a man, look at that. What a great, great shot. They will tell you that Wahoo was the consummate professional. You know, you hear the expression man's man and the real deal. That's Wahoo McDaniel, folks.
And tough.
Oh,
I mean, you hear stories of all of these different wrestlers who were just badasses and you didn't want to fuck with. Wahoo was in that class. I mean, you didn't piss him off. And I'll just say it. He would go on the warpath, all respect to Native Americans.
I want to get into that here in just a little bit, but go ahead and finish that thought there,
Jim. Yeah, but Wahoo was just, he was a badass. He really mm-hmm. was, both inside and outside of the ring. But very, when he wasn't on the warpath, or if you didn't piss him off, I found Wahoo to just be a normal average guy. A normal average guy who, if he chopped you, would cut you in half, but, you know.
Yeah, legendary. And Chris, I know we're going to talk about Wahoo's AWA years. Sporadic. He didn't spend a lot of time in the AWA.
Yeah, but I mean, he did a lot of things other places. We focus on the AWA, but I mean, you could pretty much name any promotion and Wahoo made an impact.
Wahoo did it all. I mean, we it's a lot of hyperbole a lot of times about the guys who went everywhere and did everything in the business, but Wahoo truly did. And, you know, even if you go on that old trustworthy Wikipedia and look up the championship runs and the championship reigns that Wahoo had in virtually every territory he appeared. I mean, this guy, the accolades are just never ending. He had championships in Georgia, in Florida. Certainly in the mid-Atlantic area. And there you see him in the ring with Ric Flair, and that's classic Wahoo. There's an awful lot of claret being spilled there, ladies and gentlemen. When you look at Ric Flair and Wahoo, and they, of course, loved each other. I mean, don't let this picture fool you. They had the utmost respect. I don't know how many times they wrestled each other over the years in that NWA mid-Atlantic area. The question has always been, and I think this is a great discussion. With all the titles that Wahoo won, he did not get the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for a run. He didn't get the AWA World Championship for a run. And it's very interesting. And I have some theories about it. Maybe Wahoo himself didn't want an extended run as a champion where he wanted to be able to go from territory to territory. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's the case or not. But interesting that Wahoo, as good as he was, the major championships, the big time, he never crashed the nugget.
But, Mick, I don't recall Wahoo being in the AWA outside of the end of his career. It's like he came in for just a short run. it was, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe up to a year, but he was never here, as far as I can recall, for an extended run. So it stands to reason that, okay, they're not going to drop the world championship on him.
Yeah, because it seemed like Vern was somebody that if you were going to hold the championship, you were going to have it for an extended period of time.
Well, it was back in the day. I mean, if you think about it, Nick and Vern owned the AWA championship in the 1970s.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Well,
I just want to follow that up too with the NWA. I feel like we saw more title changes in the NWA, even the brief ones, like the Ronnie Garvins and things like that, even just kind of a transitional thing. I'm kind of more surprised that he didn't hold a title, like you said, kind of in the Mid-Atlantic than here in the AWA, because I think, Joe, you made a good point that it seems like every time he was here and then he was gone.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Joe, again, the old timer going way back. Wahoo's most successful AWA time was in the 1970s, in the early 70s. He came in and he was big time here in the AWA area. I know we're going to talk about a couple of the feuds that Wahoo had, which also would lead into then versus now in terms of what you can get away with. When Wahoo came into the AWA, I want to say this was 1972. He had some great feuds, a legendary feud with superstar Billy Graham. And there's Wahoo and Flair again, just with the classic Indian strap match, that Wahoo certainly made famous. So we're going to talk about a couple.
Yeah, it took a little bit for this one to load, so that's why it's
going to be a little more than fine. Wahoo and Superstar Graham arguably was the first nationally recognized blood feud beyond the walls of the AWA. Certainly had Crusher and Mad Dog and what have you. But Wahoo and Superstar Billy Graham, and if you watch the original movie The Wrestler, the opening scene, you got Wahoo and Superstar Billy Graham, and there's the star. Going at it in a strap match, and Billy is cut open, and he comes into the locker room and he says, "Doc, look what they did. I'm gonna need stitches tonight." And the feud with Wahoo and Superstar went on for a while, and it was brutal. I was at some of those strap matches in the early 70s, and I'm telling you, my God, I don't care if you were sitting in section 221 of the balcony, you could feel that leather strap going across the back of Wahoo or Superstar Graham. Started out innocently enough. Billy Graham had an arm wrestling challenge kind of weekly in the old AWA, where he would get some of the wrestlers from the back to come out and challenge him. He was the arm wrestling champion of the world. And of course, you had all the enhancement guys coming out. You know, they could form a train of 15 guys against Superstar all at one time, and he'd put all the arms down. But Wahoo McDaniel came out from behind the curtain one time on AWA All-Star Wrestling and challenged the Superstar to an arm wrestling contest. And of course, as Superstar is about to lose, he pulled some little chicanery, moved the table, picked up the table and hit Wahoo over the head with it, the big wooden table. And thus you had one of the great feuds in the AWA. And I know we're going to talk about some of the lesser PC stuff, Chris, that you referenced. And in doing so, I want to talk about another one of his feuds, or two, actually. Larry Hyneme and Buddy Wolf were a great AWA tag team in the 1970s. And they also had a legendary feud. That is Buddy Wolf on the left and Larry Hyneme, Luscious Lars Anderson on the right.
Is that a shoot cast or is that a working sling?
That is a working sling, I do believe. And I don't know if it was Wahoo that did that to him or not. But they also had a legendary war with Wahoo. And this is where we get into that PC stuff. Back in the day, they were doing things to set up angles that you could not get away with today. And almost invariably, when you had a babyface native coming into a territory, they would tear up his headdress on television, or they would do a ceremony where he would get hit over the head by a portrait that was presented to him by some kids at, you know, at a daycare center. Hainimi and Wolf would come out on television with T-shirts that said, "Squahu is a loser." Now, can you imagine in this day and age, guys, trying to do that? It's unheard
of. What kind of heat did that generate with the fans?
Massive.
Back then, was it okay? Okay,
absolutely.
Because I mean, to me, right now, it seems like it would be low hanging fruit, but yeah. Because I didn't see that happen at that time, I can think of it and say that's just lazy booking, as they would say. But the fans really. What was it about Wahoo when he came out that the fans really got behind him, and it made things like that you know were denigrating his heritage, that fans really thought that was disrespectful?
Pro wrestling, you know, I mean, it's Wahoo had that magnetism, but wrestling was always, and Joe, you know this as well as anybody, it was wrestling fans were fighting the war, World War II. 50 years after it ended, you know, the nasty Germans, the nasty Russians, the, you know, and let's go after the easiest pop, the easiest attack, and let's go after the guy's heritage. You know, Minnesota, the AWA, a lot of the AWA cities, a lot of Native American population, a lot of Indian reservations back in the day. So you get these two big lugs, these two arrogant bastards that come out and tear Wahoo's headdress apart, the headdress that his grandfather, a chief, gave to him. And you got the feathers flying all over the ring, instant heat.
It was a different type of outrage when it was done back, we'll go back to the 70s. It was that it was disrespectful to Wahoo, more so than disrespectful to the heritage. Of course, what the headdress meant to a Native American certainly was there, but the outrage was different. Admittedly, I think a big part of it is good guy versus bad guy, you know, so the bad guy is doing this to the good guy, and if it pisses off the good guy, that it's going to create more heat in the angle. And you're right, today you're not going, you know, it becomes a political issue today instantly. But I really don't, I just don't see that it changed that much as far as, well, the only thing that's changed is the way people perceive it, or that they address it than back in the day. I guess you could say you could get away with it back then. I'm not saying that it was right or wrong, but you know, you got away with it because it was professional wrestling. And today, you're right. Good luck. And that's why professional wrestling doesn't do that anymore.
Okay, so I got a question here, because, you know, Mickey, we're talking about his best feud was against Superstar, but now we focused on the, you know, on Buddy Wolf and Larry Hainimi. What made the Superstar feud bigger for Wahoo than having his headdress and everything that those guys did? I mean, what made the feud with Superstar in your mind a bigger deal for him?
Back in the day in the 70s, you talk about the good guy, bad guy. There was no blurring of the lines back then, Chris. So Superstar Graham, who came across as this real arrogant SOB, this pompous bodybuilder type, blonde hair, you know, thinning though it may have been, and he would take the direct attacks at the Native Americans. And what added to it, their matches were so savage. And that's a key. It was back in the day.
Okay.
You know, once a year when you got the cage match or the strap match or whatever, there was that slow build. And Chris, you've talked about this so many times on this show. The slow build. Now you get some kind of a, you know, cage match or whatever, Hell in the Cell or whatever, all the time. But back then it was singular. And I love that shot because simple as it was, Wahoo McDaniel and superstar Billy Graham, arm wrestling. And then of course, boom, it exploded. To the point about what you could get away with back then that you couldn't now, they were having tar and feather matches back in the day in the southern part of the United States. I guess the only thing modern day wrestling fans could probably identify with would be the De Beers and Derek Dukes feud in the late 1980s. That was kind of a throwback to what they would get away with back then. Times have changed. You think about Sergeant Slaughter and Adnan El Casey when they tried to do that Iraqi sympathizer. They got death threats. Back in the day, it was confined to the arena and the heat was intense.
Yeah, I mean, you talked earlier about the Germans. In the 1970s, 30 years after World War II ended, and Baron von Raschke is still the goose-stepping German wearing the red cape with the, wasn't the Nazi symbol, but the four, whatever that symbol is, you know, the Iron Cross.
Iron Cross,
and goose-stepping, and you couldn't do that today. I should say you shouldn't do that today.
No. And in today's society, and this is not a knock at PC, it's just the way it is. You can't do much of anything that you could do back in the day. You can't, whether it's renaming a sports team in a town or whatever it is. I mean, it's gone so far the other direction, right or wrong. But again, Chris, to your point, back in the day, and Wahoo was such a beloved babyface. They just loved this guy. Even, you know, he had that crusher feel to him, the tough guy that you'd like to sit next to at the bar and have a drink. And Billy Graham comes out and insults him, and it was magic.
And you mentioned the one word. I think that a lot of people, when they talk about Wahoo, the one word is tough, like a legit tough guy with Wahoo. And admittedly, I wasn't around him. I didn't know him. I just was a fan of his growing up, you know, on the television. And I know I saw him, you know, at the tail end of his career, but it's like the stories of him just being this no nonsense, no bullshit, tough guy. Like they seem like they've got a lot of legs.
That's why the feud with Superstar Graham went over as well as it did. And I talked about the brutality of their matches. You knew when you looked at Wahoo McDaniel, you were looking at the real deal. This was a no-nonsense guy. This was an ex-football player. This was a big, burly guy. And we're going to get into his chops. And I know Chupik's going to, you know, talk about that a little bit.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
You know, this is – and now you look at these chop fests on television, you know, back and forth and back and forth. Yeah, some of them, you know, like Gunther, for example, will deliver the chop.
I believe it's pronounced Gunta.
Gunta, the Ring General. But back in the day, the Wahoo chop was really something, not only as a finisher. And Wahoo would deliver a knife-edge chop, guy coming off the ropes, and that was it. One, two, three. Nowadays, you know, the guys go back and forth with the chops below the ring, but you could hear a Wahoo McDaniel chop out onto Nicollet Avenue if they were wrestling at the Minneapolis Auditorium. We're going to talk about the beers here in a minute, but Joe, I know your nipple is still, I believe, lodged in your ear after all these years from a Wahoo chop.
Yeah, why would you? Why would you ask to be chopped? What kind of a dumb fuck does that?
You're looking at him.
What were you thinking?
You know, Chris,
I've done some stupid shit. I would never ask Wahoo McDaniel, "Can you chop me, sir?"
It's all sort of relative, but here I am, almost 40 years later, and I'm telling this story, and I'm able to tell this story. Quite possibly, I'm probably the only production person who was dumb enough to ask Wahoo to chop him.
But here
I am. I understand PTSD because of my stupidity as I would have been about 22 years old.
Where does this rank on all of the questionable decisions that you have made? Where does asking Wahoo McDaniel to chop you rank on that list? Because I wouldn't even say to be pretty high, because I know you've done some crazy shit.
It's tied for first with about 3,000 other things that I've done in my life.
You know, not a lot of people, and this is Chris is exactly right, who in God's name would go to Wahoo McDaniel and say, "Give me a chop"? You got to remember, too, the guys, if a layman comes up and says, "Show me what you got in the ring, give me a chop," or they ask Vern Gagne, "Put the sleeper on me," or whatever it is, the guys are not going to go light. And that's why your chest and your nipples look like a kid's dot to dot. I mean, it's seriously, you got a line going from one end to the other.
One question. How the hell do you know what my nipples look like?
They're all over the internet. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Your nipples are so famous, they've got an OnlyFans page.
They do. And as a matter of fact, Chris and I were talking about maybe having one of your nipples as another perk for the body slam and pinfall level.
Yeah, perky
nipples are usually good, but instead of only fans, it's got to be an only fan, because I can't imagine anybody having any. But that aside,
well, yeah, we've lost our only fan. We the show here half hour in.
Tell us about the chop here, Joe. I'm sorry. I'll even mute myself.
We're good. I've mentioned the story on here before. Wahoo comes into the control room, and I remember this. I'm over by the tape degausser. It was a large magnetic thing that's how we would erase videotapes. And 22 years old, I'm degaussing tapes, and Wahoo comes into the control room. We're just talking shit, and we got on the subject of his chop. We were just in Vegas that weekend. I believe it was just that weekend. And seeing the pain and the anguish that everybody had. Hey, Wahoo, what's the chop feel like? Well, you want to find out? Sure. Okay. Stupid thing 3,012 that I've done in my life up to that point. So to get to the punch, or in this case, to get to the slap of it, Wahoo. Oh, my thumbs up emoji comes up. You know, the damn technology.
Did you just give yourself a thumbs up for getting chopped?
Something special's on there. You know, if you get that thumbs up,
I think that was Wahoo.
Yeah.
He's giving the thumbs up to the story.
Giving the approval from afar. But Wahoo winds up and smacks me, not across my nipple, those are still intact, thankfully, but gets me right across the top of my chest. I don't know how long it took me before I could breathe again. I don't know how long it took before I didn't feel the pain again. I know it took some time. What I do know is a couple of things. That I would never ask to have that done again by Wahoo, or for that matter, any professional wrestler. Although it's happened since then. But two, what the hell is going on with, now I'm getting balloons on my fuck, what the hell is going on?
It's a Wahoo party. It's a chow party. It's
a chow party. I must have some setting set up. But the other thing is, I had, from that one chop, I had Wahoo's handprint on my chest for a long time. It wasn't a half an hour, probably 5 minutes plus, right across the chest. And it was beet red. And I'm telling you, I gasped after taking that chop. Now, I'm...
Were you wearing a t-shirt at the time, or?
Yes, just had, it was actually a golf shirt.
Oh man, yeah, imagine that on a bare chest.
No, thank you. Wahoo, and I know he didn't let up because it's like, just give it to me. I'd like to believe that he put a little bit more into it than he would if he was in a match, just because of my sheer stupidity of asking for a Wahoo chop. But now, again, here I am.
About
38, 40 years later.
Joe, you want to know what though? That event made you a part of pop culture history because that was the genesis of Fuck Around, Find Out.
I found out.
It all started with Wahoo chopping you.
Chris, remember when we were in Waterloo and we saw Andre the Giant's handprint?
Yes.
You know, that Chris Owens provided. I have it on good authority that they're going to have Wahoo's handprint on Cupid's chest on display anytime soon. I got to tell you, there's a couple of Wahoo McDaniel stories, but talking about his chops, he had a match at Wrestle Rock. Joe, you remember this, with Colonel DeBeers. And I'm taking pictures ringside, and Colonel DeBeers, Ed Waskowski's a tough guy. He's a big, tough guy. Wahoo and Colonel took the match to the outside of the ring. And I am telling you, talk about lighting up a guy's chest. Now, this must have been early in the match because Colonel's chest is still skin-colored. It hadn't turned lobster or stop sign colored yet, but Wahoo was laying him in like I have never seen before. And at one point, even the colonels went, fuck! So you knew something was going on there. Couple of Wahoo McDaniel stories. And I had the opportunity, and Joe and I did, to work with Wahoo. And, of course, he was one of the bookers with Ray Stevens. The last years of the AWA. And I rode to an independent show that Stan Kowalski was actually promoting up in northern Minnesota. I rode with Wahoo about 4 hours in the car with Wahoo. And let me tell you, that's an experience in itself. There's Ray Stevens. He and Wahoo, of course, the bookers. Wahoo was still wrestling back at the time. Ray, of course, basically was done as a full-time competitor. If you've ever seen a picture of the comedian Buddy Hackett, I know we don't have one of those ready to go, but one of my buddies at the old TV studio went up to Wahoo one day at a TV taping out in the lobby and said, you know, you look like Buddy Hackett, the comedian, which he did. Mm-hmm. The chief did not have a good sense of humor that day. And looked at the guy and said, I can't do a Wahoo impression, but he said, one more word out of you, and I'm going to stick your head up your own ass. And Wahoo was seething a little bit. We knew, you know, you talked about it, Joe. This is a side of Wahoo you don't want to see. Mm-hmm. And it scary, scary stuff. There he is. Look at that. Look at him. Oh, my God. Tubbs, you're a miracle worker. You came up with a picture of Buddy Hackett. And you know, you could see that. You could see the resemblance there with Wahoo and Buddy. Wahoo was not, you know, didn't take too kindly to being the doppelganger for Buddy Hackett. Joe knows a guy by the name of Chris Love all too well. And I'm kind of telling a personal Wahoo story here. This is after I had left the AWA, and there was an independent show, I want to say in Bloomington, Minnesota, about 1990-ish, give or take. And it was under the AWA banner. And Chris Love, who was a notorious manager, promoter, Bert Prentice was his name, originally from Iowa. There's Chris Love, and he managed the Glamour Girls, Leilani Kai and Judy Martin, in the LPWA promotion. Chris Love, very controversial character. At any rate, I knew Chris from the time he was a young kid and, you know, going to the matches. And he was working in the AWA office at the time. And how that happened, I don't know. Joe, maybe you can enlighten us on how. But I saw Chris at this independent show. And we hadn't seen each other for a long time and exchanged pleasantries and what have you. Wahoo was on the card, actually. And I got a call the next day at my shoot job from Wahoo McDaniel. And Wahoo says, I got to talk to you about something. He says, Chris Love came to us after the matches and said that Mick Karsh was running around smartening all the fans up to the finish of the matches, what to watch for, you know, and which was a total fabrication. I have no idea what the fuck Chris Love was talking about, why he did this, why he planted that seed in Wahoo. And Wahoo said to me, and this is the only reason I reference this story, is he says, I know you, I know your respect for the business, you're old school, and you would never do anything like that. I just wanted to verify. So just a little aside, and I don't know why, and I don't know how he got involved in the office to begin with.
Why would somebody just go around and say some stupid shit like that, though? Like, what is the, as they say, what's the payoff at that point for going around saying... Because, I mean, you've got as much respect for anybody in the business, Mick, and respect for the business.
I don't want
to make this about you, but I mean...
I don't know. I do know that before Chris Love, and this is not a Chris Love podcast, I know before he got into business, he was a fan club guy out of Esterville, Iowa, Bert Prentice. And he kind of got a reputation back then as being a little bit off the wall, as he did later on in his promotional days. Some people loved him. Some people didn't want to work with him. But I never understood how he got involved with the AWA office at a time when Wahoo and Ray were kind of big-time players.
Desperation and the time of the AWA. There were a few, shall we just say, unsavory characters who wiggled their way into the AWA office. No, Ray and Wahoo were not two of them. And I'm not even going to mention the names of the other ones. Mm-hmm. But Chris Love was one of them who made his way in and didn't have the AWA's best interest in mind, shall we just say.
Yeah, look, I want to ask about somebody who didn't wiggle his way in, and that's one of the somebody that we all love and respect and feel like didn't really hit his stride until he left the AWA was Kurt Hennig. Kind of talk me through this knife incident. Was there something that happened between Wahoo and Kurt?
Joe, you were producing back in the day, and this is 1987 AWA, Chris, and we've referenced this on the podcast before. Kurt was actually feuding with Wahoo at the time, and they had a strap match. There's the AWA heavyweight champion, Cool Kurt. They had a strap match at the Showboat. And, of course, they're attached at the wrist or, you know, and around the thumb by this length of strap leather. And Adrian Adonis was in Kurt Hennig's corner. And the finish was going to be as Wahoo is dragging Kurt, if I remember correctly, around to the four corners. Adrian comes in and he is going to cut with a knife the strap and release Kurt Hennig from the strap.
By the way, we're talking a kitchen knife. We're not talking a pocket knife. We're talking a big ass. I mean, something that you would carve a roast with.
Yeah, absolutely. No, no, you and that's key to this. Somehow or other, in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the passion, whatever you want to say, Adrian slipped a little bit. And we've talked about this before. He caught Kurt kind of in the web here, between the finger and the thumb with that kitchen knife. And I mean, like, immediately, you know, Kurt's grabbing his hand and the blood is spewing out of there. And I don't know how it happened, but again, this is on live television. I don't know if it's out on YouTube. If it is, I don't know how much you can really tell, but I know Kurt had to have stitches that night. It was pretty serious shit.
Well, let's just say that Adrian wasn't 100% sober. And let's just say that it wasn't exactly alcohol that made him not sober.
And that it's when you know that you've got to have a sharp object like that, and that's part of what the story is going to be. How could you be that irresponsible and get yourself in that altered state when you know that you could do something pretty, pretty bad if you're not totally focused onto what you're supposed to do?
Chris, you're talking about the wrestling business, especially back in the day. It was normal. No, not almost cutting somebody's thumb off or causing that damage. But, you know, whether it's painkillers or drinking or, you know, smoking a joint before, you know, you go out to, it was not uncommon back in those days. And I'm not saying that everybody does this, but when you've done something hundreds, if not thousands of times, you don't think that, oh, you know what, if I just have a couple of beers that I can go and do my job.
It's going to be fine because your tolerance level, you can handle it.
Well, tolerance level, you've done this so many times that you can do it in your sleep.
Yeah.
That was sort of the mentality. So it's not like, oh, and by the way, it's not like Adrian had used a kitchen knife to cut a leather strap thousands of times, but this was just part of what they did every day. It was an accident. Adrian was not 100% clear in his mind. It just happened. It was nasty. I mean, Kurt's thumb was there. It was gushing big time. It was
Adrian is not here to defend himself. I mean,
yeah, so, no, and I don't want to cast aspersions on Adrian. I don't want to do that.
I mean, accidents happen, you know, it could have been that Kurt moved a little bit, or, you know, the knife slipped or what have you, but it was
nasty.
It was very, very nasty. I know we're getting down there, guys. I don't know. I mean, we've talked around Wahoo McDaniel a little bit. I think, Chris, in terms of what his legacy is to this business, I don't know if you, as a fan who came on later in time in wrestling, can really appreciate just what Wahoo meant to the business.
I don't know that I can, just because I don't feel like I got peak Wahoo.
You didn't.
I feel like I got Wahoo kind of, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, I feel like I got him more as a novelty and more as an attraction than a main event player that he is. Like, the toughness, I have no doubt he was still as tough as nails. But, yeah, I don't feel like I got, you know, and this is kind of one of the reasons we do the podcast. I don't feel like I got a lot of these legends at any part of the peak of their career. And
you didn't.
And that's, so I feel like the legacy, it might be understated when it comes to some of the younger fans. But I wanted to, I just wanted to ask, there was one more, a guy that I was a fan of was the Raging Bull Manny Fernandez.
Ah.
And I've heard, I mean, I've heard stories about their feuds, but I mean, Joe, did you work some of those, the Manny Fernandez?
Well, and I don't know if it was the very last one, but if it wasn't the last one, it was pretty damn close, but it's Super Clash 3.
Okay.
Wahoo McDaniels against Manny Fernandez. And if my memory serves me right, that was a strap match. And the two of them, there you go. That's from Super Clash 3. The two of them, hundreds of matches. I don't know how many strap matches, but the two of them had an incredible amount of respect for each other. And they put together matches that were believable from their first strap match to their very last one. And
well, they're both legit tough guys. Like I wouldn't want to mess with either one of them, honestly.
You're correct there. I remember leading up to Super Clash 3, Manny being in the studio, and Wahoo being a booker, he was in the office, but Manny would cut a promo and then the two of, you know, just berating Wahoo and then getting, you know, okay, cut. And they'd go over, they would talk about the promo. Wahoo's talking about how he can come back with the promo. They were professionals, they respected each other, and they were friends. And it was, you know, 88 was Super Clash 3. So I had been in the business about 3 years, or working in the business for about 3 years, and had seen enough of, yeah, this was before kayfabe was fully revealed. But to see those two talk the way that they did and respect each other the way that they did. As a fan, still as a fan back in those days, I loved it. It's just like, that is professionalism at its peak in my mind.
One thing I'd like to say in terms of the brutality, like you would get with a Fernandez and a Wahoo or what have you, you watch wrestling today, and a lot of the guys, these high spots, are the guys doing it to themselves. Darby Allin going through glass, or somebody jumping through a table, or what have you. Back in the day, these guys were kicking the shit out of each other with chairs and tables and ring bells. You're back in an era. Think about this. In the AWA, at one time, you had Mad Dog Vachon, Wahoo McDaniel, Dusty Rhodes, Dick Murdoch. Oh my God. Talk about, you know, guys you would want on your side in a bar fight. Legitimately tough. And I think that's Wahoo's legacy plus his professionalism. Yeah.
So I know we got to wrap things up, but let me just, as a fan, watching Wahoo grow up, his interviews were, he was pretty mild-mannered. When he got heated, it still was tame in comparison to others who did their promos. He wasn't flamboyant in that way. But watching his matches, he would come out, he'd have his headdress on, he would be introduced as half Choctaw, part Chickasaw Indian.
Yes, yep.
And then you'd get him pissed off. Wahoo would do the war dance, you know, one foot, he had the tassels around the boots. He would do the Native American dance, if you will. I don't know if it was the war dance, but do that dance, throw a couple of chops, and then do the chop with, I mean, it was, when you saw Hulk Hogan, you know, do the comeback at the end, that was Wahoo's comeback. No matter how much he got the shit knocked out of him, which really wasn't a lot and too often, but when Wahoo started that dance, you knew, okay, we're coming to the finish. Mm-hmm. We're coming to the end of the match. And 99 times out of 100, Wahoo was coming out on top.
So, who wants to talk? I think he had a book out too, didn't he? I mean, I'm not familiar with it, but I know that was his widow. His wife wrote a book.
His widow, Karen McDaniel, who I had the opportunity to meet very briefly, wrote a book about Wahoo McDaniel. And I haven't read it personally, but it has gotten great reviews about her time with Wahoo. There it is there. If you get an opportunity, I've heard excellent reviews about the book. And John Cosper is a great writer, and Karen McDaniel. So it's out there. Maybe a more intimate look at Wahoo McDaniel. But again, in the history of wrestling, I mean, if Wahoo McDaniel is not in your Hall of Fame, something's wrong.
You know, last episode you talked about Andre and me drinking in a drinking contest. Yes, I would get my ass kicked by Andre, literally and drinkedly. You know, Wahoo could have probably put up a good battle with him.
Wahoo had a ginger ale once or twice in his life.
gotta stay hydrated when you chop as hard as he did.
There you go. That's it. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Popeye needs a spinach.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Tubbs. That's
more than just a pretty face here, guys. All right, we're coming down to the end. Time to bring it home, and let's do it with the shout-outs here, guys. Mick, I think you always go first.
Let's talk about my dear friend, Pam Powell, out in the Denver area. Known Pam for literally 50 years. She was a wrestling fan way, way back in the day. Have maintained some sporadic contact with her. Sweetheart of a lady, and hello to Pam.
And my shout out goes to, as I understand it, he was a longtime police officer in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, has a special attachment to me because one of my children is a police officer today. And so my shout out will go to Joe Mariello. Joe, I know I've been told that you have been a longtime listener and fan. I believe I've seen some of your posts on our Facebook page as well. So shout out to you, Joe. Thanks for your service and for being a fan.
And I'm going to go to Tom Paterka. Hopefully, Tom, I said your name right. Appreciate the DMs and you just kind of always keeping me in the loop on certain things. So thank you, Tom. And thank you to everybody. And if you want to be more in the loop, we've added to the pinfall level of our membership tier here, guys, that Mick, you are going to provide AWA pictures, 4x6 photos of AWA stars. Pinfall level, guys, we're going to have another watch along. Our third one is going to be coming up within the next couple of weeks. We're going to be dropping that for members exclusively. We do have some interviews. I've got one more idea that I want to throw past you guys that I think I think could be a lot of fun. Also, you're going to have access to the live stream that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, live on a Sunday night where we're all going to get together and just, you know, bullshit and talk about wrestling, whatever else comes up. So you want to get in on that before the next two episodes drop. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Did we do good?
We did good, and just want to let people know our next show, I believe, is going to be yet another fan-based show. If I remember correctly, Chris, are we going to be doing the charismatic, the most charismatic personalities, or is that down the road yet? Because I got a poll coming up.
Yeah, I bet.